Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David Benson, the 12th of Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, downtown Detroit, down Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 7, 2017, or it is Tishri 18, 2021. We're going to start our first service today with a song entitled When We Walk with the Yah. When we walk with the Yah in the heart of His way, our glory sheds on our way. Let us do His good will. He abides with us still, and the Lord will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yeshua but to trust and obey. Not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, the glory is quickly repaid. Not a grief or a loss, not a frown, not a cross, but His blessed gift we trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yeshua but to trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of His love until all on the altar we lay. For the favor He showed and the joy He bestowed are for them who will trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yeshua but to trust and obey. And in fellowship sweet, we will sit at His feet, and we'll walk by His side in the way. What He says we will do, where He sends we will go, and we'll say humbly trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Yeshua but to trust and obey.
Part number 4, Judgment and the Harvest, we're in page 45, last paragraph, Vaviti Harvest Tract number 3. It says, and before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats, and He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on His right hand, these being the second fruits, come ye blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Then shall He say also unto them on His left hand, depart from Me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angel. Matthew 25:31, 34, and 41. From this separation, the one among the nations come forth the second fruits. For the angels who are around about the throne in the heavenly sanctuary during the judgment of Daniel 7:9-10, and of Revelation 5:11, shall, as the parables explain, descend with the Son of Man when He comes into His temple. Now, if anybody comes unto his temple, his, it says, parentheses, his church, to separate by judgment the wicked from among the just, and to purge as gold and silver those who may abide the day of his coming, that they may offer unto him, unto Yahweh, an offering, and the righteous, Malachi 3, 2 and 3. In a graphic demonstration that he will come onto the earth with all his angels to execute judgment upon the living, the Yahshua revealed himself prophetically unto Ezekiel as being brought enthroned to the earth by four living creatures just before the slaughter of the hypocrites and the Seventh Day Adventist Church at Gilead Center 2002 takes place. And as each of the living creatures has the face of a lion, the face of a calf, the face of a man, and the face of an eagle, Ezekiel 1:10, the same judicial insignia as have the beasts who are before the throne in the heavenly sanctuary, Revelation 4:7, in the time of the judgment of the dead, and as they descend to the earth, they thereby symbolically show that the work of the mediatorial judicial throne, which convenes and presides over the judgment of the dead, is extended onto the earth. For the extension, so far as we are able to know, now must take place at the opening of the seventh seal, Revelation 8:1. For at that time, the celestial voices which opened the judgment of the dead ceased in the heavenly sanctuary and began, after half hour silence, to sound on earth. In other words, just as in the heaven at the opening of the judgment of the dead, there were lightnings and thunders and voices, Revelation 4:5. Likewise, on the earth, at the opening of the judgment of the living, there are voices and thunders and lightnings and an earthquake, Revelation 8:5. With the judgment of the dead, however, the work of the separation takes place in the books in the heavenly sanctuary, whereas with the judgment of the living, the separation takes place among the people and the church, as well as among their names in the books in the heavenly sanctuary. This showing that both sanctuaries will finally be cleansed. Inescapably, therefore, the Yahshua's coming unto his temple, Malachi 3:1 and 3, his coming with all his angels, Matthew 25, and his coming enthroned above the living creatures, Ezekiel 1, all three represent the same event, as has been shown, take place at the beginning of the judgment of the living. That would be 2002, starting at the Hermit, Texas, the time in which the judicial activities of the heavenly sanctuary extend unto the earthly sanctuary and to the Seventh-day Adventist Church with its headquarters at Gilead Center 2002. And folks, we've been all these years now, about 15 years removed at the beginning of the 12th hour from that place. And we are yet to meet the 144,000. But yet, as we go on and study this judgment process, we will soon one day be able to see, but as only as we make the progress and become sanctified holy ourselves, can we see more clearly when that time will arrive. Let us continue. And I left and behold a white cloud, exclaimed John the Revelator, and this is in the same coming variously described by the Malachi, Matthew, and Ezekiel, and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. Another angel came out of the temple crying with a loud voice unto him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle and reap, for the time has come for thee to reap. For the harvest of the earth is ripe. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Revelation 14:14-16. This coming of the Son of Man is plainly there, for not when the resurrected and the living righteous are called up together to meet him in the air. For verse 17-20, following the ones quoted in the paragraph above, reveal that after he came and reaped the earth, another angel, having a sharp sickle, came and reaped a second harvest before the wrath of Yahweh. The seven last plagues, Revelation 15:1, was poured out upon the wicked. Thus, again, and for the fourth time, it is seen that there are two different comings of the Son of Man. The one to sever the wicked from among the just in the Seventh-day Adventist Division, Seventh-day Adventist Church of Kermit, starting in 2002, Matthew 13:49, and then immediately to call the just from among the wicked in Babylon. So there's two comings. He comes, takes care of the judgment, the church, the house of Israel first, and then he goes and comes again and takes care of those in Babylon. Revelation 18:4. For the other to take the saints, both the resurrected and the living, to the mansion which he has prepared for them, 1 Thessalonians 4:16, John 14:1-3. At the former coming of the Son of Man, the stone which smote the great image was cut out without hands, without man's aid, and by the Yeshua himself, because as the Yeshua says, there was none to help, and I wondered that there was none to uphold. Therefore, my own arm brought salvation unto me. And I will tread down the wicked and lay down the people in mine anger. In my anger, and make them drunk in my fury, and I will bring down their strength onto the earth. Isaiah 63:5-6. This work of the separation or cleansing brought to view in the parable of Matthew 13:30, and again in that of Matthew 13:47-49, also in the prophecy of Malachi 3:1-3, and in that of Ezekiel 9, as well as in the Revelation 14, is directly applicable unto the judgment day for the living. But the cleansing of the saints were at the end of the 2300 days, according to Daniel 8:14 and Daniel 7:9-10, applies directly to the judgment among the dead. Though the cleansing of the sanctuary has already been seen from the Daniel's prophecy, was to take place after 1844 AD, yet since the living righteous are still commingled with the sinners in the church, and since Daniel saw the ancient of the day sit in the judgment, not to slay those who had the mark, but to judge from the books which are open, obviously his vision of the judgment is in respect unto the dead. As to the cleansing of the church on the earth, it is to be accomplished first by the casting out the abomination. Second, by restoring the truth. So you have to cast out the abomination first. Restore the sanctuary system. When it says restore the truth, it says means to restore the sanctuary system. So, and third, by taking away the tares. Okay. So this is what we had to do all over again. This is what has to be done all over again. 1970, Brother Johnson, he cleansed the sanctuary here on earth from the Davidians, from the shepherd rod, from the Ben Rodens that was in charge of Shepherd Rod, closing them out, he cleansed the sanctuary by restoring the feast days and the sacred name and the ordained system of true worship. He cleansed the sanctuary. And then during his 32 years, he ended up rescinding all of that. So Yahweh raised me up to give a message and says, restore it again. He refused to do it, so he represented the abomination that maketh desolate stand in the most holy place, Daniel 8:14. Matthew 24:14-15. And so he represented then at that time the abomination that made desolate. So it said after he was cast out, the truth had to be restored again. With Elijah Davis promising that I will restore the deity and the ordinance of the true worship if you don't. And the fact that now my wife and I have taken the creation calendar and we have perfected the publishing of it. It took my wife quite a few years to get it down. It was no easy matter. But now that we got it down, in the last 2 years we got the, without any help, publishing the calendar right here at our headquarters, shows that we have restored the truth. And third, by taking away the terrors. So the terrors were taken away. Well, actually, the terrors haven't been completely taken away yet. Because the 144,000, when they come forth, that means the terrors have been completely taken away. But as to the cleansing of the sanctuary above, it is now being accomplished by removing from the book of the life the names of those who are found wanting, then by placing them in the book which contains the names of those who are to come up and the resurrection of the wicked after the 1,000 years, Revelation 20:5. Thereby leaving in the book of the life the names only of those who have gained the victory over sin and who thus are waiting to come up in the resurrection of the just, Revelation 20:6. John accordingly saw the dead, small and great, stand before Yahweh, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works, Revelation 20:12. Beyond the reasons already adduced, there are still further reasons for both judgments. As the cleansing of the heavenly sanctuary is a work of the cleansing the books by blotting from them the names of both the backsliders and the terrors, and as at the time of the trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, the only ones who shall be delivered are those whose names are found written in the book. The cleansing of the books, therefore, obviously takes place before the resurrection and before the time of the trouble, such as never was. Thus, the unfaithful dead will be left in their graves at the first resurrection, and the unfaithful living will be left without the deliverance from the coming trouble. But were their names allowed to remain in the books, then according unto the records, either the wicked dead would have to be resurrected with the righteous, and the living wicked delivered with the living righteous, or else both the righteous dead and the righteous living would have to be forsaken with them, alternatives both of which are impossible, thus again making mandatory and absolute separation as instant in the type in Joshua's time. There is an accursed saying, said to Yahweh, in the midst of thee. O Israel, thou canst not stand before thine enemies until ye take away the accursed saying from among you. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan and all that he had, and all Israel stoned him, Joshua 7:13-25. From this bulwark of the evidence and the proof of the cleansing of the Seventh-day Adventist Church here on earth, and of the books in heaven, towers forth the impregnable truth that the living who can continue faithful unto the end, retain their names in the book of life, shall in this time of separation receive Yahweh's mark or seal of the deliverance, while those who do not shall be left without it to perish in their sins, and correspondingly the dead whose names are retained after the judgment in the book of the dead shall come forth in the first resurrection, Revelation 20, verse 6. While those who were unfaithful in the life wait until after the 1,000 years to come forth with all the wicked in the second resurrection, Revelation 20, verse 5. So while it is necessary in the congregation of the dead to separate the wicked from the righteous now waiting the resurrection morning, it is just as necessary in the congregation of the living to separate the wicked from the righteous now preparing for the deliverance from the coming trouble and awaiting the second coming of Yahshua, his visible coming to wake the dead saints and to take up both them and the living. There are therefore two separations, one among the righteous dead and the other among the righteous living, the dead being appointed to the resurrection and the living to translation. Those on the right hand whose names shall be blotted out of the books are those who shall have failed to put on the wedding garment, Matthew 22:11. And at the Master's command, Matthew 22:13, they shall be cast out never more to be among the wedding guests. But this cleansing of the book of life is further seen to be a necessary in order to enable the angels rightly to select the saints, for when the Son of Man comes with all his angels, he shall send them with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect, the resurrected from the four winds, from the one end of heaven unto the other. Matthew 24:31. And take them to join the living. For the concentrated light now shines forth from the prophecies herein, view in their correlative connection, shows that both the saints were in the heaven and the one on the earth were polluted. And by the political and military conquest of the heathen powers, but rather first by some of his converts, not enduring, Matthew 10:22. Second, by the Satan's bringing in the tares while men slept, Matthew 13:25. And third, by the exceeding great horns casting out the David, treading down the truth and bringing in the abomination that maketh desolate, thus involving both the earthly and the heavenly sanctuary. His startling revelation shows conclusively that the cleansing, according to Daniel 8:14, is first of the sanctuary in heaven and second of the sanctuary on earth. Important as it is, and who would fail to make a diligent and careful study of the nature and significance of this great work of the Elohim's investigating the guests who have come in for the wedding are simply indifferent unto the prospects of the eternal life, so great salvation. For when a person's judgment is pending and he is unaware of the fact, he will be unprepared and unable to stand when his case is investigated. To this all-important subject, therefore, we are to give the more earnest heed, Hebrews 2:1. And in doing this, we must approach the judgment in the light of the parables. The seed sower, the seed, the field, the season of the cultivation and growing, and the season of harvest must together be perfectly calculated to illustrate the spiritual kingdom. Otherwise, the representation can only lead into error instead of into the truth. For the four seasons of the year, all being required in completing the process of the planting, raising, and harvesting the year's crops, and all of them being the beginning of the agricultural year, just as the close of the summer season is the feast of the ingathering, which is in the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field, Exodus 23:16. For this parable therefore illustrates by the 12 months of the year a period of the gospel history, and according to which the kingdom of Yahshua is to be set up, and the beginning of which is a period is the seed sowing time, there being a period of church history illustrated by this 12-month harvest period. We must therefore find the time of its beginning, the time of the seed sowing, and the time of its closing, the time of the reaping. For he that soweth the good seed, says Yahshua, is the Son of the Man, and the enemy that soweth the tares is the devil, Matthew 13:37-39. Says, the Son of Man, he who soweth the good seed, is none other than the Yahshua. But as he could not be called the Son of Man before being born of a woman, he accordingly could not have sowed the good seed of the spiritual harvest after his birth in the Bethlehem, Judea. As his ministry, his sowing of the good seed, the truth, began right after his baptism, Matthew 4:17. Therefore, to establish the beginning of the parabolic harvest period, we must ascertain the date he was baptized. After 62 weeks, prophesied Daniel concerning Yahshua's ministry and his death, shall the Messiah be cut off, but not for himself, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Daniel 9:26-27. That this is a prophetic time reckoned by the year, day, a rule of Ezekiel 4:6 is seen from the fact that there were 7 years from the time that Yahshua was baptized to the time that the apostles were permitted to take the gospel unto the Gentiles. During this period, Yahshua confirmed or fulfilled the covenant, and in the midst of the week, or at the end of the 3.5 years, he was to be crucified, thus causing the earthly sacrifice to cease. For the fact having been established, see illustration on page 55, that the 3.5 years of Yahshua's ministry terminated on the 16th day of the first month, then counting 3.5 years, follow the illustration on page 55, we find that his baptism took place on the 16th day of the 7th month, which was in the week of the tabernacles, and the celebration of which was the end of the agricultural year, the close of the harvest, Leviticus 23:39. Thus we see that the parable is in perfect fidelity unto nature, and that the Son of Man commenced sowing the spiritual seed right on time in the end of the old and in the beginning of the new year's harvest, in precisely the right season of the year, with the sowing of the seed beginning with Yahshua's baptism and the harvest coming at the end of the world. The period of the parable obviously embraces the entire gospel dispensation, from the beginning of Yahshua's ministry until the close of the probationary time between the two is the 3.5 years from the beginning of Yahshua's ministry. Three and one half years from the beginning of Yahshua's ministry until his crucifixion being the sowing time, and the harvest time being the end of the world, and the intervening period is the time for the growing and ripening of the grain, also the tare sowing time. Upon finishing his sowing of the good seed, the Son of Man left his house and gave authority unto his servant, and to every man his work, and commanded the porter to wash, Mark 13:34, but with him gone, men slept as men are given to do, when their employer is away. Thus, sometime after Yahshua ascended on high, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way, Matthew 13:25. But his children sleeping knew it not. What a tragedy, ironic picture. Zion's watchman falling asleep on her very walls while the enemy slips over unseen and unopposed. Oh, what a fearful guilt of the gross dereliction of the duty lies upon the watchman since the apostolic days. Denouncing those today responsible for this failure to protect the congregation from the fellowship and virtue of anyone who professes an interest and shows a desire to be fellowship, though such a one neither be grounded in the truth or bringing forth fruits meet for repentance. The spirit of prophecy declares too much hasty work is done in adding names to the church roll. Serious defects are seen in the characters of some who join the church. Those who admit them say, we will first get them into the church and then reform them. But this is a mistake. For the very first work to be done is the work of reform. Do not allow them to unite with Yahweh's people in a church relationship until they have decided evidences that the Spirit of Yahweh is working upon their hearts. Many whose names are registered on the church books are not Christian. What stronger evidence is needed to convince oneself that the watchmen have lost the spiritual eyesight which John the Baptist and the apostles had? Tragically, true indeed, the sharp indictment. Sleeping preachers preaching unto a sleeping people. Testimony, Volume 2, page 337. For the discerning, when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come unto his baptism, that they would later crucify his master, Yahshua said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits meet for repentance. Matthew 3:7-8. Thus he exposed and thwarted the devil's move to bring in the tares at that time. For well did he know that if the tares once got in and then he tried to weed them out, he would uproot the wheat with them. And then during the time of the apostles, Peter, as a faithful watchman of the church, detecting the devil ascending again to come in with his bad seed, said unto the guilty, Ananias, why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie unto the Holy Spirit and to keep back part of the price of the land? And Ananias, hearing those words, fell down and gave up the spirit, and great fear came on all them that heard these things. And it was about the space of 3 hours after when his wife came in, and Peter answered unto her, tell me whether you sold the land for so much. And she said, yea, for so much. Then fell she down straightway at his feet and yielded up the spirit. Acts 5:3, 5:7, 8, and 10. For the fact that the congregation too has failed to discern the devil sowing his seed among them twice over vindicates the indictment, sleeping preachers preaching unto a sleeping people. Testimony, Volume 2, page 337. And proves that the entire church, both the ministry and the lady, is sound asleep in a fulfillment of the words of the Yahshua. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. But while the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. Matthew 25:1-5. For the evil of allowing the devil freely to sow the tares among the wheat has existed in the Christian church since the passion of the apostles, with the result that whenever Yahshua have sent a message unto his people that tarries among them, have straightway at the instructions of the leaders. Raise your hands and vote it out, whoever would listen for the message, unto the message, and obey the message. Now thus, time and again, selling their birthright for less than a mess of pottage. For the professed people of the Yahweh have lost out. And still the Seventh-day Adventist congregation at Gilead Center has never learned the tragic lesson. O ye house of Israel, warns the Yahweh, let it be sufficient of all your abominations, and that ye have brought into my sanctuary strangers uncircumcised in the heart and uncircumcised in the flesh, to be in my sanctuary, to pollute it, even my house, Ezekiel 44:6-7. But ever unto the faithful as the terrors have crowded them out of their midst, the Yahweh's comforting assurance has been, blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. And that, boy, you talk about fulfilling a prophecy here. That's also found in Isaiah 66, verse 5, and Luke 6:22-23, as we're reading here. Rejoice ye in that day, and leap for the joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets, Luke 6:22-23. As the period since the passing of the apostles has been the wheat and tares growing time, and as moreover, the Laodicean congregation is the last of the seven sections of the Christian church in which are commingled the wheat and the tares. Okay, let's read that again. Seven is the last of the seven sections of the Seventh-day Adventist congregation in which are commingled the wheat and the tares. We must learn the answer unto the question, which is the Laodicean church? So V.T. Olive, represents the division Seventh-day Adventist, and he's asking the question, which is the Laodicean church? Well, it's that seventh one, naturally, that we would read about the seven congregations in Revelation chapter 1, which would be entitled Laodicea. But Laodicea took in her daughters as well. Took in Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead. That's SDA, DSDA, and BDSDA. Alright. So, Laodicea may be infallibly recognized amidst the many isms of the Christendom by the work she is doing. Declaring the judgment, indeed, this mark of the identification is pointed out by the very name Laodicea, compound of the two Greek words Leo and Dikaia, the one meaning people and also speak, the other meaning judgment, for the two and the one meaning the people declaring judgment, for the congregation therefore which declares fear Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come, Ezekiel 14:7, is evidently the one called Laodicea. And it is almost as well known outside of the Seventh-day Adventist circles as within, that the Seventh-day Adventist congregation is endeavoring to carry the judgment message of the Revelation 14:7, and is therefore unchallenged in her claim for the title Laodicea. Okay, plainly then, the names of the seven congregations representing the successive sections of the apostolic congregation of which the Laodicean is the last, are not just names. Take as another example the name of the Sixth Philadelphia, its meaning brotherly love, being a misnomer of the spiritual condition of any other congregation organization in the entire Christian era, implicitly fits, however, the state of the charity common and senior unto the Sixth, the Millerite Charity. Being the one shining example of a church never guilty of thwarting or trying to thwart in any way her members and their exercise of the inalienable right to investigate and accept for themselves whatever their conscience bid them investigate, and accept she alone contributed nothing unto the grievous condition, calling forth the scripture, hear the word of Yahweh, ye that tremble at his word, your brethren that cast hated you, and that cast you out for my name's sake, and said, let the Yahweh be glorified, but he shall appear unto your joy, and they shall be ashamed. Isaiah 66:5. End the separation of the tares from among the wheat, or the end of the period in which the wheat and the tares are commingled, is the time of the closing work for the Laodicean congregation, the last of the seven churches. This work is identified by the church founder as the marking in Ezekiel 9, the seal of the spiritual Israel. 144,000, see Testimonies of Ministers, page 445, and Testimony of Volume 3, page 266, Volume 5, page 211. And this identification is conclusively substantiated by the fact, as herein seen, that the Ezekiel's prophecy is a separation of the two classes, those who saw and cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. That's in the Seventh-day Adventist congregation, and those who do not. And as the former are delivered, while the latter fall under the slaughter weapons of the angels, there is clearly seen a complete separation of the tares from among the wheat in the time of the harvest. Now this is true. When you start at the beginning of the harvest, they go out into the field, and they first pull up the tares by the root. And you know when they pull the tares up by the roots? That's the last time that they have tares come up in that field, or should at least. If they pull them up by the root and don't lose any grain on the ground, then those tares should be finished forever in that wheat field. And indeed, in the spiritual harvest they are. Though the true meaning and time of the harvest is greatly confused by some and confusing unto many, a close study of the word will clear it in just as simple a manner as it cleared both the time of the seed sown and the period of the wheat and the tares. With his eye piercing the midst of the ages, Yahshua foresaw the negligence of his watchmen and the evil which was to spring up in his congregation. Nevertheless, after being asked by his servants, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tarried? Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? He said, nay. Thus while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them, that both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest I will say unto the reapers, get ye together first the tares, and bind them in the bundles to burn them, but get the wheat into my barn. Matthew 13:27-30. But you know, this all of a sudden, this parable is ablaze with the new meaning. For the minister that Yahweh has appointed to be in charge of the candlestick of his congregation, they're the ones that's supposed to keep the lights burning always. And when the light is kept burning always, Did you know that means the flowing of the truth newly every day? So Brother Johnson, restoring the sanctuary system in 1970, had the charge of the candlestick, and he was in charge of keeping the lights burning in the temple. That means he had to furnish new oil every day for the lamps. Because as the lamps burn, they use up the oil. Oil represents new truth on a daily basis. So, the lights are supposed to be kept burning by the priest, the minister in charge of the candlestick. And so what happens when somebody comes along and says, I want to join your church, Brother Johnson, he says, well, come right on in. Just come right on in and join my church. He doesn't vet them. He never vetted them. To say, well, let's see what your background is like. Do you have any sins in your life? Are you practicing open sin? No, he never questioned none of that stuff. So that is a symbol of while men slept, the enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. So when Brother Johnson closed his eyes to sin in general, of the church in general, then it was an easy matter then for him to overlook and not even question the sins of newcomers that's coming to the church. And boy, by not doing that, he had one man that was possessed with the devil. And he channeled every day, and he talked to the devil every day. And he was allowed to come in and take Passover with us for quite a few years. He came from another state. He was a wicked, evil devil, but Brother Johnson never vetted him. He just said, well, let the wheat and the tares grow together in the harvest. But the thing is, if Brother Johnson had vetted him, he would not have allowed him to come in and join the church and took part of the ordinances. So that's the case of the watchman on the walls of Zion are asleep. The appointed watchman down at Kermit was asleep. Okay? That constitutes the enemy coming and sowing tares among the wheat and going his way. Meaning that the old devil come along, he blinded the eyes of the servant that's in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, and caused that servant to accept sinners into the camp and baptize them and everything else. With all their paraphernalia. Alright, that's so much for that. I said, a harvest means the result of the effort of toil, the gathering of a crop, reaping the result of the labor and filling up the barn with the grain. So rather than the year's toil being finished at the beginning of the harvest, the heaviest labor of the year just then began. And though harvest time is the shortest of all the periods of the harvest year, the work of the reaping is not done in a moment. It takes time. For the yield is not garnered by the turning the field right into the barn. No, that would be a conglomerate mass instead of a harvest. First, the sickle is put to the grain, and next the grain is bound into the sheath, then threshed, after which it is put into the barn, and thereafter the chaff and the tares are destroyed. This work being completed during the autumn, it shows that the harvest is a season of time after the summer is past, and that it is followed by the fruitless winter period. So it must be with the spiritual harvest, which otherwise could not be illustrated by the literal. Do not regard lightly the wisdom of Yahweh. His illustrations are perfect. Consider now with what exact fidelity into the natural harvest the Master has stated the trees of the spiritual harvest that both grow together until the harvest, he says, and in the time of the harvest, I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together first the tares and bind them in the bundles to burn them. forgive the wheat of my barn, Matthew 13:30. In these parabolic words, Yahshua has made the spiritual method of the harvesting analogous unto the natural method, where the one not precisely like the other, he would have distinguished the difference, being admonished therefore not to let vain imagining come into the mind, but stand squarely on the scriptures, for they are full of the meaning of the illimitable value, or indeed your very life. As the word until means up to, the tares are therefore to be gathered out, not before or after harvest, but at the beginning of the harvest. And the time of the harvest being the end of the probationary time. Okay, this is wrong. The time of the harvest being at the beginning of the 12th hour, at the beginning of the probationary time, not at the end. So we're going to draw a line to that word end, and we're going to put at the beginning. Okay. Well, of course, he's quoting from Ellen G. White here. But see, this is Vichy Hollis. He didn't go and investigate all these points for himself. He just took what Sister White said as the gospel truth, I mean, as the law, and published it and went on. But Sister White made this statement in Christ Object Lessons, page 72. Then the harvest in itself necessarily precedes the close of probation. Okay. The fruitless winter season. Consequently, the tares are separated from among the wheat before, not after, the end of the probationary time. So he's right there. For the wheat, the children of the kingdom, Matthew 13:38, are gathered into the barn, the kingdom. The tares, the children of the wicked one, verse 38, were professors, those who are not doers of the word, and who are granted membership while men slept, are gathered and burned in the fire, Matthew 13:40. After the wheat is bound into the sheaves. But who are the reapers? The reapers are the angels who shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just, Matthew 13:39-49. These angels are not those who shall come with the Yahshua at his second coming, but rather those whom he shall send forth. They are like the three angels of Revelation 14:6-11. Okay, so now, well, then who are these angels that he sends forth? He sends the fourth and the fifth angel, Revelation 14:14-19. Indeed, the third angel is to select the wheat from the tares, and the seal or bind the wheat for the heavenly garner. Early writings, page 118. Okay, so there you have it. Indeed, the third angel is to select the wheat from the tares at Gilead Center, current Texas, 2002. Well, that's all Brother Johnson initially had, was just the three angels' messages. That's all the power that he had, was just what the power of the three angels' messages would afford. Because the fourth and the fifth angel, fully understood and put into operation, brings forth the power of Pentecost. And seal or bind the wheat for the heavenly garner. Early writings, page 118. Therefore, the angels, the reapers, whom Yahshua sends forth, include both him who does the sealing or binding, and those who follow on to do the destroying. Ezekiel 9:2-5-6. First in the congregation, then in the world. Thus is a separation in two sections. For the command, gather out of his kingdom all things that offend and them which do iniquity, does not mean to gather his saints from the earth into the heaven, neither does it mean to destroy the wicked from the earth, for the former are to be gathered not directly into the heaven, but first into the barn, the kingdom on earth, and the latter are not to be destroyed immediately, in the time of the harvest, but first are to be gathered into the bundles and then destroyed, as is further illustrated in the parable of the net. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a net that is cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into the vessel, but cast the bad away. Matthew 13:47-48. But this parable also shows that the separation of the wicked from among Yahweh's people and the church, the net, this being the first section of the work of the separation, the beginning of the harvest. The subsequent section follows in the world as the earth is lightened with the glory of the loud cry angel, and as another voice from the heaven says, "Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sin, and that ye receive not of her plagues." Revelation 18:4. Note that in the first section of the separation, the one in the Seventh-day Adventist Church at Gilead Center 2002, the wicked are taken away from among the just. Whereas in the second, the one in Babylon, the just are called from among the wicked. As the field is the world, Matthew 13:38, the parable of the wheat and the tares necessarily comprehends both sections of the harvest, as by the contrast the net hauls in the fish, the converts made by the gospel church. The parable of the net, therefore, is limited to the separation and the church. Together they distinguish the relation of the first fruits to second. Let's read that again. Together they distinguish the relationship of the first fruits unto the second fruits. For the Isaiah also was given a view of this twofold harvest, for by the fire and by his sword he prophesied, "Well, the Yahweh pleaseth all flesh, and the slain of the Yahweh shall be many. They have sanctified themselves and purified themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh, and the abomination in the mouth shall be consumed together, saith Yahweh." Isaiah 66:16-17. This brings the close of our study. This hour contest at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song. Give us the best, your best to the master. Give us the best to the master. Give us the strength of your youth. Throw your soul's fresh glowing ardor into the battle for truth. Joshua set the example. Dauntless was he, young and brave. Give him your loyal devotion. Give him the best that you have. Give up your best to the master. Give up the strength of your youth. Light in salvation's full armor. Join in the battle for truth. Give up the best to the master. Give him first place in your heart. Give him first place in your service. Consecrate every part. Give and you shall be given. Yahweh's beloved son gave. Gratefully seeking to serve him, give him the best that you have. Give up your best to the master. Give up the strength of your youth. Let his salvation's full armor join in the battle for truth. Give of your best to the Master. All else is worthy His love. He gave Himself for your ransom. Gave up His glory above. Laid down His life without murmur. You from sin ruined to save. Give Him your heart's adoration. Give Him the best that you have. Give of your best to the Master. Give of the strength of your youth. Carrying salvation for farmers. Join in the battle for truth.